Like I've picked up more of like Zephyr, for example, but the thing is you've got to go to smaller exchange for that if you're not too familiar with all this stuff. Like, you know, this is more for like crypto natives who are real dorks and understand all this shit. Like, you know, it's a fairly detailed project that, you know, I have like a substantial interest in. And so I kind of picked up some and been talking about it. But then again, I didn't notice. I didn't try to explain that to you because, like, if you're not really deep into this, like, there are some projects that I think, you know, require sort of like, you know, I think a deep fundamental understanding to sort of bother with them. Otherwise, you won't feel comfortable with whatever risk or metrics that you're taking. So there's some things I only tell like crypto hardcores, honestly, like only because, you know, it's, you know, it is what it is. Like, you know, again, it depends on how deep you want to go down these rabbit holes, right? Like how much do you really want to know? But I, for one, have really simplified my process quite a lot the last couple of years, I would say, through the bear market and stuff. I've trimmed down the number of sort of coins that I think are likely to go up. And many of them, like, there are some that I have, like Chainlink, which is a sizable bag, and it could probably 10x from here. But the reality is, like, that's going to be a much, like, that relies upon a perfect bull market with everything going up and everything, right? Has prior history, but at the same time is relatively low risk. Like, if I drop 50% or whatever, that's normal, but, like, you know, probably won't do too much more than that. Whereas a lot of other things, you'll have extreme volatility. I tend not to tell new people too much about the ultra volatile stuff, because then what happens is they just freaked out by the volatility and they sell low, which, you know, you don't want to do that, not this early in a bull market. So I don't know, any of these microcap type things, you really have to understand like market volatility and the fact that like a 70% drawdown in a high frequency token is not unremarkable at all. If you've been here a while, you've probably noticed that. And you can't let that shit shake you out, right? You have to either decide like, okay, I'm going to buy the dip on something when it goes down, or like
double down on it. I carried my bag through the whole last bull, but I mean, I'm learning, you know what I mean? I'm getting better. But I carried them all the way down to negative, you know, to minus 90% or whatever that I had. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, but I don't think things have sort of quote unquote pumped too much. Only a few coins have, but most have just started their upswing, honestly.
Yeah.
In fact, I bought several things today, like that looked like they were breaking out from, you know, special levels or whatever. So, but I'm not packing up too much more into crypto right now. I think like if Zephyr's one that if it for some reason it drops like $15 or something, I might throw a bit more in, but everything else pretty much bags packed, I would say.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, because I've put most of the money that I'm going to put into it already, but I'm thinking like what's the end, like what, January, maybe we get a little bit of a dip after Christmas. And then it should be up, straight up or semi straight up, right? Down days, up days, but mostly up for the next year and a half. Would you say January is the last time you buy?
That's usually how the cycles run. But it's so hard to predict that shit. Like we've talked about this since the space, like for a while, like, you know, is there going to be an ETF coming for Bitcoin in January, February? Is that going to lead to a sell the news type of thing afterwards? Is it, you know, halvening for Bitcoin's in April. So, you know, usually the halvening year 2024 is going to be really, you know, big one way or the other. You know, all the memes and stuff are coming up, and all the like Google's trends are starting to pick up now, just now. And so usually the big, like, you know, late crowd comes much, much later. Right. So when you'll know when the late crowd has arrived, because Dogecoin and everything will just kind of moon, right. Until all the like old coins, like your Algorands, your Bitcoin, your Ethereum, Atom, all those older coins that have been there for a few years, if those start mooning, that means the new crowd is coming. And that new crowd tends to open up their apps, right? You've done this before. You hop on Coinbase, you hop on Kraken or some shit. You start pushing buttons. You're like, oh, I think that looks interesting. I'll buy that. So
I like the colors.
I like the colors.
Yeah, I like the pattern.
Exactly. That's exactly what we did, right? So when you first start, you start playing around in there, and then you go, okay, I'm going to push this, push that. And so when the retail crowd shows up, who's never been here before, what they do is they just start like pushing buttons, and you'll find that they tend to push buttons on the top 100 coins because they're the ones that show up first on the list, right?
Yeah.
So if you see Ethereum starting to pump and you start seeing like, you know, Atom and Algorand and everything go up, a lot of that means that like now you're starting to really see the crowd show up. And then if you see the break of prior highs, like ETH breaks prior high, Atom breaks prior high, Chainlink breaks prior high, then you know it's on like Donkey Kong. That's not the time to sell either. That means that you literally have a full-on bull market where, you know, just a gigantic exponential upside is when that happens. So you're in here super early this time, which is great. So like if you see those signs that things are breaking all-time highs, you just ride it, man. That's what I would do. So yeah. And if that doesn't happen, but you're already up 10-20x, who gives a shit? Exit and be done with it then. Like why sit there and take risks on predicting the exact top and what the fuck else when you got at the very bottom and you just get your 10x and get out. That's fine too.
Yeah.
Hey, Sefi, I just want to say something. Like, you know, I also hold something like 1,000 of DOT. And I just want to know, you know, the DOT is not considered as a security in the ACC documents. So do you think if regulation come really hard, DOT can be treated as an immune currency like Bitcoin and Ethereum?
I don't remember if Polkadot was considered a security on the recent Coinbase sheets. Maybe some of the guys here know.
But. No, it's not. It's not. In fact, it's even on, I saw it on an ETF or not on an almost like an ETF, but on a VanF or whatever. Someone kept posting about that and I was seeing VanF. A chat about it. Yeah,
it
but somebody's already got it in.
Yeah,
they attempted to be like compliant and not be a security or whatever, but that doesn't mean like that's guaranteed.
Yeah, let me pull up Polkadot's chart actually and see. Interestingly,
it is an interesting coin.
Polkadot has performed absolutely miserably in the sense that like in the bear market, it put in its low. Its absolute low was in October. Like it didn't even put in a low like after the FTX crash. It bled out even longer, which is interesting. So it's really had a hard time catching a bid. And then now after it started to go up, what happened is like it only went up one fib retracement and just broke out of that just now. So it's behaving more like a Dogecoin in that sense. I think a lot of crypto natives have moved on from a lot of the older coins and want stuff that really moves a lot faster. So DOT's okay, and maybe the tech is good. And I know we have a Cosmos IBC connection to DOT being created or some shit. But man, like, it definitely has a lot of baggage and a lot of bag holders that bought much higher.
It's interesting.
So these resistance levels, well, these resistance levels are moving very slowly on DOT.
We talk about DOT a lot, and DOT was actually founded by a very key Ethereum a founder who was very heavy in the tech and brought a lot of his understanding into DOT. But that person who founded DOT,
Gavin,
he's been dismissed. And I think that he's been sidelined by the DOT community and is no longer running the chain, which is interesting because we haven't talked about ADA, Cardano, where the other counterpart of Gavin, you know, that's running ADA. He's actually still, and I might be opening a can of worms. Sorry, Sefi, but, you know, I hold ADA.
Fine.
I don't hold DOT because, you know, for me, I just don't see that much of a future for DOT. And I do see a future for ADA. So that's all I'll say about that.
I think ADA just picked up for their side chain or their C chain, they just got connected with something with DOT. Galvin and Charles got together again.
Oh, that's alpha. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So look it up. That just came out about 2 weeks ago on the C chain, Midnight or something they're calling it.
Yeah.
On Cardano, they just got together and I saw them speaking on a space together for the first time in a long time.
Midnight is the concession that Cardano doesn't work though. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yes, I also in that space. I also talked with Charles that night. Seriously,
I think I heard you there. Yep.
I question whether that partnership works out.
That's so all I'm just for reference, hold on. I pulled up the Cardano charts just to see what it did, and it only has gone back up 2 FIB retracement so far. So, you know, still kind of like doing okay, not a little bit better than DOT. But as far as price action, if you were to pick one that hasn't moved yet, DOT would be the one. Like if you were kind of gambling and wanting to know which one would go up, has a little higher upside already. So DOT's barely moved already. So Cardano's a bit.
So you're saying the fact that DOT has barely moved is a positive, not a negative?
Well, positive in the sense that, like, you know, almost everything moves in a bull market, right? So the thing is, do you want the one that's already gone up or the ones that's about to, right? That's the thing. Dogecoin's the same thing. It's only gone up one FIB level so far. It just kind of broke out of it.
And talk about something like FTM and their Conge stuff.
Phantom? Yeah, I don't know anything about what's happening with Phantom. Isn't that Andre Cronje thing?
That chain is like haunted at this point. I would never touch it personally.
Isn't Phantom, though, closely tied to the Ethereum ecosystem? Or am I wrong?
It Absolutely. Is EVM compatible.
See, for me, it's all more of the same. When it's EVM compatible, layer 2, yeah. Phantom, I mean, it's all more of the same. I don't dabble so much in that. You know, I've got my Matic. You know, I've got a little bit of ETH. And I've got NFTs on both of them. That's kind of my liquidity play on those. But I don't want to like poke around in the EVM. I don't see, for me personally, I don't see a future for the EVM. I feel like it's much easier to have better tech like Cosmos or Avalanche or, you know, ADA or something like that.
They're building Phantom virtual machine, you know, FVM. They are not totally built on EVM.
Remember this, Celestia makes ADA and Polkadot unnecessary. So can we consider that problem? So that's an interesting thing, right? So yeah, I think these newer things, like I don't think these are going to catch a bid that easily, these older chains. But now, don't get me wrong, like there's a pretty good strong cult behind Charles Hoskins and everything, and they love buying ADA. So like it's sort of like the XRP club. There's a gigantic group of people that just love to buy ADA for whatever reason. So it'll go up, but like at this point, there's nothing special about the tech there that, you know, you can really put your finger on.
I mean, ADA in the last bull run made a lot of millionaires. I mean, it was massive. I mean, hats off to Charles.
No, they did a great job with the shillability, right? Like that's where Cosmos doesn't do a great job, right? That's what everyone bitches about.
That's a good example. ADA did that without like a viable product.
Well, it depends.
It's really impressive.
Because Cosmos was Terra in the last bull run as well. So, you know.
That's true.
You know,
yes, that's
you
true.
You had ADA and Luna.
But Adam, I'm talking about specifically, you know, like.
But you had ADA and Luna just killing it in the last bull run. And, you know, so we had a Cosmos representative and we had ADA and then we had ETH and. You know, those were in Bitcoin, you know, those were the top five for several weeks.
Yep. Well, this time, like, it's clear that, like, between Injective and all these other projects, like, just so many Cosmos projects are mooning right now that everyone's taking notice, right? It's pretty obvious to everyone now that the tech is good and the chains don't halt and shit and, like, everything works and got good throughput and everything. So it's been good. I think everything that we have will moon. I'm not too worried at all about it.
Yeah, that's one thing that I really hope changes in terms of the narrative in this next bull run is even you, Seffi, you said, you know, Cosmos didn't lead the way because it's Atom. But, you know, if you add up all of the Cosmos chains, you know, Cosmos enters the top 10. And yeah, and I get a thumbs up. You know, Cosmos enters the top 10. As one of the best technologies, our ecosystem altogether, especially when Terra was, you know.
Well, remember, Matic is Cosmos chain, and so is Binance Smart Chain, and so is Crow, Crypto.com. Yeah, like in the top 500, you got like what, 30 or 40 chains, something like that. So it's a lot.
Exactly.
That are all like
and Osmo and Stargaze and all the rest of them. You throw all those in, and the broader cosmos, you know, as it's better defined as the cosmos, you know, you add all that in, and it's definitely, I think, a top 10 crypto ecosystem. You know, right up there with the rest of them. So just looking at the Atom token at, 28, 29 rank, doesn't tell the whole story. And I hope that we're able to tell that as cosmonauts in this next bull run. That would be really beneficial to everybody.
Oh, holy shit. All my stocks just mooned, by the way. Anub was posting something about the S&P 500 going parabolic. I bought all the stocks at the very bottom.
Yeah, it's because in the FOMC meeting, they basically said they're going to hike three times potentially next year instead of just one time. So that was like a big, big sentiment change.
Damn, like Cal-Maine Foods, 10% positive. ChargePoint Holdings, 8%. Some BS one. Boston Properties, 8.5% growth. Like, this is mooning more than my crypto is. Banco Bradesco, 6%. Bank of America, 4%. AstraZeneca, 3%. Arc Genomic 5.7. Like, what is all this shit? Like, Amgen 2.78%, Albemarle 10% pop, Archer Aviation 3%, Arbor Realty 5%. Jesus Christ, like, everything's up. Coinbase Global 7.76 today. DDD, which is 3D Systems, 7%. Let's see.
I was gonna say Coinbase, that they're literally taking my funds hostage.
Enphase 8%. I mean, almost my entire portfolio that I bought at the bottom is going to be like getting close to green.
But that's exactly America's. What I'm talking about. Isn't that the excitement of what they reported today? And won't that go down tomorrow or the next day? So why not?
This is the pre-market. So this is actually the post-market is actually rising a bit too. Yeah, they could drop tomorrow.
There's a good chance it does. Yeah, it does that.
Usually.
Like every time.
But remember, most of the stuff I bought when it was completely wrecked. So a lot of these are really down already. So the trend is probably going to be they're going to go up more. The one I bought this morning, remember, I got online. I was like, hey, my Organon stock is down 20%. And I bought, like, I doubled down on it this morning. Remember, I like OGN, and it's up 7.63% after I bought it this morning.
I'm not saying that you get out of it. I'm just saying we sell like Avalanche. I'm considering selling tonight, depending what it goes up to. So if it goes up to, and I don't do fibs, I'm just a regular guy, right? I'm just a regular guy.
It's really easy. It's really, really, really easy.
I know, but what I'm going to try, I'm going to look into it. But what I'm going to do tonight is if we go over about 1250, right? I'm going to put everything in a stable coin and I'll buy it back tomorrow or the next day at, and make, 5%, 8% on that stock. You know what I mean? I've gotten stuck once in a while doing that. Don't get me wrong, because it doesn't go back down to the number that I wanted. So then I'm stuck, and then I got to get back in at a more expensive price. But stuff like this, with the excitement of Powell saying that we may cut three times next year and that we're not going up on interest rates, that just gets people excited for like one day.
ADA is up 15%.
Yep. Now everything's popping off. And with that news, like, the crypto space is going to pop off substantially too. Like, even Zephyr, like, because BTC is rising and it's a lot of miners and stuff involved, it just went to 25.9. Its FIB was like at 24.69. And the only extension past that is the $52 mark. It's a low resistance. There's very little Zeph on MEXC. So I think, like, if things go up, it should start continuing fairly soon.
But to Nelson's point, so, I think all I would say to that is, I could guess that things will go up and down, but, the amount of regular guys and gals listening to the Fed's rate today, I think is rather low at this time. You know, they're more busy Christmas shopping. They're more busy just finishing out their year. I doubt that many regular people who represent the main buyers of the retail that's going to come into this in 2024, that everyone is looking to adopt crypto. they didn't check the Fed minutes today. You know, this is all people who are more tied to markets. So I see this as really still bullish. You know, you might think it's a trick, but who are they tricking? Are they really tricking Wall Street? Did somebody really trick Wall Street to pump stocks 5%? Or, you know, I don't think anybody in retail is paying attention right now at this time of the year.
No, simple answer. The entire stock market was like very much oversold, especially the Russell index, which Wabi and I talk about a lot. And so I pretty much picked up everything all the way to the bottom. So it's like, meaning everything. I mean, I bought like a lot of shit, like all sorts of different things with high dividends and stuff. And the fact that all of those kind of popped today, like my portfolio in total is only up like 3%, but that's a pretty good pop for a day.
Yeah, I think retail exuberance. I think retail exuberance is really tamped down by a war in Europe, a potential war in Middle East and Asia. I don't think that, you know, the Joes and Janes with a little bit extra money are looking to see what the Fed said today to make a difference. But I think they will be once they see the markets start to rocket in 2024.
Well, let me just go. Like, let me just read off real quick, like the level of increase in the stocks that I have from that I bought just since October. SL Green 110%, Lilium 93%, Alpha Metallurgical 87%, Coinbase 79%, Jackson Financial 60%, Riot Platforms, which is the mining thing for Bitcoin, 53%, AMD 43%, KeyCorp 43%, Tesla 42%. U.S. Bancorp 41%, Boston Properties 40%, Kohl's, the store, you know, the one that like, you know, go to shopping at 35%, Toyota 33%, Fifth Third Bancorp 33%, Truist Financial 31%, Foot Locker 31%, CRISPR 30%, Celanese 30%, Intuitive Surgical 28%. So I'm just ripping it as far as like stock market growth. But that's what I was saying when I said this morning, use Martingale into the all the wrecked stocks, then everything pops eventually. And buying the blood is really all that matters. And so you can just completely blow away the various hedge funds and whatever by doing that. So when people ask, like, well, where do you get money to buy crypto? It's because, like, I'm not fucking around all day. I'm, like, paying attention when these things go down and just simply, like, scale in steadily and, you know, grab the bottoms, you know, and then they all go
what
up.
What was your time so, scale on those, yeah. on those pumps, the 40%?
This entire portfolio was... started in October. I created a new one just for like, I want a vacation portfolio that I have for high dividend yielding stuff. So these are pumps on top of the fact that most of the stuff that I bought has dividends too, by the way. So the assets are high and the dividend yields are relatively high. So I bought those, you know, so I can just take vacation on with the dividends forever. That was the goal. Like, you know, like just from the dividends alone, I'll just use them. Because dividend taxes are low, right? So that it's like 20% taxation or something. So it's an inexpensive way to sort of like buy into a business sort of. And if you can get them low at the bottom of these crushed markets, that's the way to do it. So that's why like all the last year I was posting like little stocks that I bought. I'm like, oh, I bought this. Look at this chart. It's wrecked. That meant I bought it. Like that's the whole point of doing that. But anyway, yeah, it was pretty effective. But yeah, here's the point. Like, why will crypto go up a lot? Because when the stock market's doing well, then a lot of people feel like their portfolios are comfortable. And if their portfolios are doing comfortably, then they're more likely to go on to higher risk assets and play in crypto and stuff. This is just the general mindset. So with a positive stock market rally, there's a probability of Bitcoin rallying more, and there's a probability of risk on assets, smaller cap stocks, crypto, stuff like that popping off left and right. So this is the other like bullish case. That's the reason I read that, not to gloat about my stock gains, which are pretty good, but to say that like the crypto space ought to get a benefit from that growth as well. But anyway.
Yes. And also you also hear that thing there. US inflation is now on the sticky zone. And if you have any idea what is sticky zone, I know a few things. The sticky zones, that means inflation is not going to pump or dump quickly. And that means rate cut is coming very fast. Do you think it's a very bullish?
Usually if rate cuts happen, then people have more money in their pocket. They have less to pay in terms of mortgages and other things. So then the economy usually sort of picks up again. But our inflation is like 3.2%. It's pretty high. So I don't know. usually like to keep it like under 3% for the most part. 2.5% is usually pretty good.
It is not going to down quickly, or it is not going to up quickly, because it's in now in the sticky zone areas. So it will be stay like 2.5 to 3.5.
That may be the case. Yeah, we'll have to see. Yeah, I don't really know exactly what will happen. And sometimes it's not being about being exact, like with these things, right? You just have to be. All you have to ask is like, when the market dumps, are you ready to buy something or aren't you? That's it. All the other nonsense is like, people like sit on Twitter Spaces macro LARPing and talking about FOMC rates and all this other bullshit. They don't know what the fuck they're doing half the time. Like, honestly, like when you listen to them speak, they're like, do you ever buy anything? Like I don't see on their timelines and posting they're buying any stocks or doing anything. So I'm just really suspicious that they actually make any money with their macro knowledge. Or maybe like mostly they're all invested. So some of those people are just so fully invested that they don't play around too much, and they just have like, you know, IRA or something, and all they care about is the general trend, but they're not actually doing anything with that information. So like, that's the other question. If you're not going to do anything with information, why sit around and talk about macroeconomics all day? Some people just are just macro nerds, and they just like to talk about it more than they actually do buy anything. So it's interesting, but whatever. It's but there was like, that's just me talking about like, a lot of Twitter space over the last year have been like macro people, you know, complaining about one thing or the other, or like, you know, and they never actually commit to anything either. Like, oh, yeah, they could do this, or they could do that, or they could do this. Well, are you buying anything or not? Like, that's all I want to know. And if you're buying something, tell me what to get. That's all I go to Twitter spaces for. And like, rarely do I get anyone to tell me what to buy.
I totally agree. I mean, that's kind of what got me off my hands. You know, if you think about just sitting there rolling things into mutual funds, you don't really take an active role in that. And it wasn't until, you know, crypto came along where I could really dabble in things that had like an, you know, a chance of really outperforming and get a sense of what could outperform. But, you know, if you're just in mutual funds and, you know, you're rolling some things into that on a regular basis, you know, it doesn't matter what the macro does. You're not going to be able to impact that at all. That's out of your control.
Yeah, the reason, so I knew the stock market because it had been really crushed, and price earnings ratios had all come down, and like everything looked like super cheap comparatively, and the relative dividend yields were high. I'm like, okay, just all these businesses that probably aren't going out of business, let's just go and like throw some money at each of them. And I waited till like most of their charts were down in the dumpster, and if they went down, I went and got even more. Sort of, you know, double down sort of and martingaled into these things, and then really just didn't really care what each of the companies did or didn't do, or exactly what the Fed says, or who cares, because at the end of the day, it's like, are you going to buy the dump or aren't you? And that's all that really matters. And if you plan that out, and if you have the capital to do so, then just go for it, right? And that's exactly what it did. And then now everything's in the green, but like, I didn't wait for the economy to turn the corner or some shit to buy. Because the stock market usually front runs all of that. So retail usually buys really late compared to a lot of others. And so, but even the smart money was on the sidelines. They were interested in getting their 5% risk-free yield and everything. So notice how suddenly when the tide turns, all those money managers start dumping cash in because they have to be exposed, because they have to show their, you know, their constituents or whoever owns those customers who own, you know, assets in those funds, they have to show some growth, right? They can't just sit there and show that they did 5%. Otherwise, you know, why would you be investing with these people, right? You could just invest in a money market fund or something. So they have to show something. And so they all jump in and ape in at once. So the so-called smart money, you know, is always late to, in my mind, can be later the party than you can be, because they have to manage huge amounts of money and they can't take the same risks as you do as an individual. As an individual, you can just create a stock trading account, throw some, you know, darts at a dartboard when things are on the way down. Say, for example, energy. You think ExxonMobil is going out of business? I don't think so. You could pretty much martingale that to the very bottom, right? And so it's fairly easy to sort that all out. You don't have to know too much about this stuff. Just know that, like, if you're nimble and, you know, you have income coming in and you just watch for opportunities, there will always be some there. And big fund managers don't have the luxury of just throwing darts at a dartboard. They have to do all sorts of detailed risk management and shit. And they have to meet certain requirements as far as like mutual funds and stuff, things like that, as far as what they can invest in, what they can't, whereas individuals have a bit more power, especially if you get in during like one of these big market crashes, like the COVID crash, or like, you know, last year, you know, October, November was really in, everything was in the dumpster, right? So yeah, you have like, you have some leeway that those fund managers don't. And so the macro people, when they talk in spaces and stuff, some of those guys are really smart and they're really, you know, thinking about what's going up and what's going down and why and whatever. But the thing is, they might be hamstrung as far as what they can actually do about that information, because they can only, you know, they can only do so much as far as like, you know, because of their risk management concerns or whatever.
But we also have to think about what the denominator is on your, on the number go up for your crypto, because, you know, we're talking about a fiat dollar denominator in most cases. And the DXY today is down almost 1% on this news. That means if it's risk on again after such a long bear market and a lot of fear in the market, that means that people are not going to be gravitating towards fiat currency, which is over longer term devaluing itself. And people will go back into crypto, which, you know, if it pumps, great. But if it pumps and the dollar or the euro denominated against your investment is also declining in its purchasing power, that even pumps the value of your investment over holding dollars or euros even more. So, you know, the dollar's down today, crypto's up, stocks are up. If that's the trend over the next year or two, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, and like just the few coins that I mentioned, you know, can go up a lot and I'll be doing pretty well. So like, I was just mentioning, like, I didn't even have that much Kajira. And, you know, a 10x from here, and it's like, it's just a gigantic amount suddenly. Like, it's just, so like, yeah, it's an interesting thing about crypto. And you're talking about 10 and 20x's, you're talking about extreme, extreme differences in valuations that become material quite quickly, right? Yeah, I just posted that Zephyr appears to be sort of like working on a reversal here. Probably everyone else is going to post the same thing here, but its Fib level is like 25 some, and yeah, its Fib levels are on 25 and change, and the it's now at 26 something. So it's the second time it's attempting to break out this week. Let's see if that happens.
It's had a nice consolidation now.
Yeah. Wow. It's really looking good.
What wallet do you use for Zephyr?
It has its own wallet because it's a privacy wallet. Dimitri is actually making a wallet for the iPhone, which is one of the community guys. He named it Zephy. It's just kind of funny, like after my name. And that's going to be coming out. But there's also a web wallet that you can use just by hopping onto the their webpage, zephyrprotocol.com. And there's like a web wallet, and there's also downloadable ones for your desktop. Which
so mainly people are holding it on exchanges or in a web wallet with no dedicated wallet.
Yeah, because like you can do the you can do the downloadable wallet as well, but it's not, it's a privacy chain, so they're brand new. It's basically Monero forked wallets essentially, but yeah, they work fine. There's no need to keep it on the exchange for sure. If you leave it on the exchanges tend to trade your coins, and you want to like elicit a supply shock by taking all the supply off the exchanges anyway. So if you want your number to go up, always take your coins off the exchanges. It definitely helps. In fact, let's see how much is left on MEXC, just on the order book. Let's see, trade, Zeph, probably very little now. Let me see here. Yeah, there's probably at most like 30,000 Zeph all the way up to like, of course, you know, these order books, the limit orders will move up, but there's very little actual coins left available there. So as prices move up, the order book will get torn up pretty quick. And then you'll have some kind of supply shock when that everyone sort of like pulls their limit orders and things just sort of fly. And, you know, you could quickly reach like, I don't know, in Zephyr's case, you have fib levels that are, let me see where they are. So, and this is the reason why fib levels are important, because if you don't understand this, you don't understand what kind of moves these things make. So we're at $28 now. If you break high, $129 is next and $207 is after that. And remember, like when it comes to fib levels to the upside, oftentimes things will break like two or three fib levels up and you're like, God damn, that's a lot. That's a big jump, right? And you're like, holy shit. But we see it happen every day. Like it happened with Kajira, it happened with Injective, it happened with FET, it happened everything. So you have to, the fib levels are necessary. Extensions are necessary to understand like just the extreme levels to which these things go. And if you don't understand that, then you would sell too soon or whatever.
To break levels once in a while. Otherwise you have all these professional swing traders who are just going to be ruling the world, right? So they have to be kept honest so that the price can move organically.
Well, I mean, market makers will always be there and they'll be selling some because they have to get more. They have to sell into the market somewhat to sort of put liquidity back into the market as well. So there's different elements to that, but my point in saying this is not that it's going to hit exactly one fib or the other, is that you use that to manage your expectations. So you're not thinking that, oh, like Zephyr, you waited all this time to break $50. You're like, oh, it went to 100. Whoopee. No, these things move when you get a markup in a crypto space asset with a relatively low liquidity, these things can move a lot more than that. So it could go to a fib level that's, you know, $300 to $400 and without breaking a sweat, right? In fact, it just did. Like, so it went from $1.80 to $50 to like $4 or whatever, $52, whatever the top was, right? That's a 50x basically, right? 50x. Not a 10x, not a 20x, a 50x has already been made off the bottom of Zephyr. And so when you get the next pullback, you won't get a 50x the next time. But can you get a 20x the next time? Absolutely. So you have to be very, very careful about selling too early and just messing around. So the benefit of these small market cap projects, by the way, is that it doesn't really matter how much it pulls back. You don't have to time shit because you bought so low. If you're buying at 25 and things goes to 400 and you give a flying fuck exactly where the top was or where the next pullback comes to, you shouldn't even care because you're so far ahead by that point that like, what are you greedy about at that point? Just chill, ride the wave. And then, because Zephyr is really one of these projects that I think has, you know, 1 to 3 billion market cap potential and it's at 50 million, right? Remember we talked about this, the hash rate is like 3 gigahash per second or something thereabouts. Monero is at 2.5 gigahash per second, and Monero's market cap is $3 billion. So we had Caspa push $3 billion just this year, right? So it's not impossible to have these things do this as long as you have like a deeply committed group of people that are buying the coin, right? If you have a bunch of people that are going to dump it immediately, then that's different. But a lot of miners who are mining Zeph, you think they're going to sell for the electric bill? Get the fuck out of here. They're in it for the big moves, man. Like they're not, you know, running 2.5 gigahash so they can sell low, right? Like most likely those miners are going to be like, shit, yeah, we're going to go for a billion market cap. And then we'll start selling where the liquidity gets better, right? So usually as more exchange listings happen, we only have MEXC and a bunch of small ones. But as exchange listings start to occur over the next year, exit liquidity becomes more solidified and you might see like 500 million to 1 billion market cap numbers in a proof of work system, right? Remember, 2.5 gigahash, that's a lot. 3 gigahash for a CPU computation, that's quite a lot. Monero doesn't even have that much. And it's been around since 2014. And this has only been around for 6 months. So like, yeah, do not underestimate what that means. It mentally I just go to sleep knowing full well that any dip that happens in this thing, I can just, I just tend to add to it personally. And then just, I got my bags packed at this point. Last time I got was picked up some as $20. So I got some at six, 27, again at 27, again at 27, and then at 20. And that's basically my buys. So we'll see how it goes. But anyway, that's the mindset that I'm in. But like, there are metrics of why these things go up and why they may not. And they're not that complicated, but it does take a long sort of like knowledge base of history to understand like why something might or might not do well. And but you know, this is not my only bag either, by the way. I have a large cap like Chainlink, I have BTC, I have this, that, and the other thing, you know. So we've talked about all that all day. So it's not like I've got only one bag and it's the only thing that has to go up. So
how do you guys feel about Bonk being listed on Coinbase tomorrow?
Bonk. I don't know. So usually when you get a new listing, you have one of two things happen. You could have something pump or you could have it dump. The reason why it can dump is a lot of holders, whale holders, they tend to wait till large exchange listings. And the reason is because there's additional liquidity tied to that and they can exit without causing as much price slippage. So I don't know the tokenomics of Bonk and what it is and where it is and whatever, but exchange listings sometimes can lead to tokens faltering. Other times they can bump.
You are familiar with Bonk though, are you?
Yeah, it's a meme coin, right?
Yeah.
Is that Ethereum?
Yeah. No, yeah, it's on Solana.
Solana, sorry. Yeah, yeah, no.
It's pretty interesting what they're doing as a meme coin. Like, you know, so they airdropped, you know, like late last or at the beginning of the bear market when Solana was like at, like, I don't know, you know, its bottom basically. And they are actually doing something called like a Bonkmas. So they are airdropping people if you complete a list of tasks. And it's pretty crazy. Like, I bought the Solana phone recently just because, you know, of all the hype and I've been messing around on the network, and it's actually a pretty cool, I mean, there's so much on Solana. And on the phone itself, it has a dApp store. So it's basically like a group of applications that Solana has chosen to be on this, and Bonk is one of them. And it's a whole interactive app on the phone itself. It's pretty interesting. So I think that there could be definitely something here.
I also get adopted, but you know, this token is like a whale who hold 10% or 20% token. And there is a risk out there, you know?
In crypto, basically, I don't fade anything. Anything can, like Moon, right? Like, it just depends on the community, how popular they make it, how good the shilling cartel is that shills a thing and whatever.
Seth, do you remember when Coinbase listing actually meant something? Like, there was all that hype around the listing, and then most of the coins would actually do pretty well, and they would shoot up, but...
Yeah, you know, the Instapump, right?
Yeah, now it's a different time and age, so...
What's happening now is a lot of things they exist on DEXs, or they list on other like L1s, or they have like other price discovery mechanisms, and then they get listed later. So back in the day when things used to get listed on Coinbase, like you'd see it pump afterwards. Now what happens is it tends to pump beforehand because of the news, and then it tends to drop after it reaches the actual exchange. So just be aware of that. That's much more common nowadays.
Yeah,
that's exactly what people think used to happen. It used to pump right when it showed up, right? Like, that was very, very common.
I remember Dogecoin. Like, they didn't even announce it, and they just listed it. And I remember it, it like skyrocketed, right? That was about the time when it was running up to 74 cents or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah.
Be fun. Yeah, they can
work out. I think that this is the like the Dogecoin, like I think it's the Dogecoin, because I think that Solana is going to be an outperformer in this market, and I don't know, I think that this is the coin. Like, is it shit? Are shit coins shit? Yeah, but like you said earlier, like, you although, don't fade anything, and you never know, you know, you never know, like, although you're only in it for the percentage.
But if you wanted a couple of things that you wanted real percentages, I would definitely. And I mean, definitely. And I got some today, so I'm just going to warn you that I already picked it up. But I'm not today, a few days ago. But Neutron is only at 200 mil market cap. And it that sucker is backed by fucking everybody. And it's on every exchange known to man. And so that sucker is going to absolutely moon. And it's only 200 million market cap. It's a L1 that's tied to, you know, the Cosmos sidechain sort of. And that's easily going to like that's kind of like, to me, an easy 10x type number from where it is now. So I think it's one of those where it's like low risk, not meme-y at all, but like nobody knows about it yet because like nobody knows what it is. And so like there's this kind of like, yeah, getting early to something is difficult because like finding that alpha early enough when this before the thing like goes up 50% of its move.
Steffi, if you hard. If you had $1,000 right now, easiest 10x, what you putting it on?
Easiest, I would say probably like with the lowest sort of like risk characteristics, I'd say probably Neutron. Now, I didn't put the most into that one because like I just got into it 2 days ago, but it's probably the most like straightforward from a risk perspective.
Is that NTRN on Osmo?
Yes, yes. And there's a lot of the big reasons are like it's like mega VC backed and whatever. It's got like Binance Labs behind it, which is why Binance has already listed it, even though it's only like a microcap type of thing, right? So everybody in the universe is going to be able to see that. And it's the same thing with it. So this is one where it's gotten to the exchanges before it became popular. So as the price goes up and someone says to themselves, wait, can I get this thing? It's going up in value or whatever. The alarms are saying it's in the green and shit. Then they can go anywhere on the planet and grab it, right? So that's like, and everyone in the cosmos can get it easily with the Kepler wallet. Anyone on Terra can get it with the Terra wallet, you know, connecting over to Neutron or whatever. Like anyone on any centralized exchange can get it. So I legitimately, and not only that, but Binance Labs is backing the fucking thing. So it's like, Jesus, they're going to be like, developers are going to show up and build shit on it or whatever. So that seems like a really, really like early one to me. It wasn't even so much that it was like, oh, it's another Cosmos chain or whatever. Like Soy is the one that was part of that, you know, one of our friends. And but when after I saw it, I was like, wait a minute, like it's only 200 mil market cap still. I thought it was late. I was like, oh, I heard about this 6 months ago or whatever. And I didn't go and get the airdrop and I didn't go and buy it or whatever. And I'm like, go look at it. I'm like, holy shit, it hasn't pumped yet. And everything else is just mooned. So anyway. So, yeah, but anyway, it's an interesting one. The one I bought today was Injective because it broke all time high. And I think that will probably pull I don't know about 10X, but like it definitely has gas in the tank for like a, you know, like a 4X pretty quickly. So I bought some this morning. That's INJ. Just because it's one of the few coins, that has broken all time high from last year's bull market. That's a rare thing.
And also they are paying shares.
I can't hear you very well. What's that?
Also they are paying high amount to the shillers.
Yeah, you mentioned that before. Yeah, it's got a big shill cartel. That helps.
Yeah, so. I don't know how you could buy once we miss it. Like once I missed it at, you know, $5, $3, whatever it was at, and the guy from the Shark Tank was talking about it and he was backing it and I don't like him, so I didn't buy his coin. So once that went through and it already blows up, like, I don't know how you got the balls to say at this point, as much as it's gone up, I'm still buying. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh no. It's because once you in crypto, when you break all time highs, that's like the mark, everybody on in their dog knows that that's like, it's going to moon at that point. Cause there's, remember, I don't think you understand price discovery. That's, you keep making this mistake. New coins that don't have any price history. And when a coin breaks above prior highs, it's called price discovery. There's no bag holders. There's no one to sell on you because everyone's in the green, right? There's no one that's like, you know, underwater who's ready to dump on you because everyone's getting rich. So what happens is everyone holds and everyone pumps the shit out of it. And everyone talks about the water cooler, tells their friends and shit. And it just moons. Like, look at BTC, Bitcoin, after it passed 20K back in 2019, 2020, right? Like, everything just went and skyrocketed to 65K or whatever, 70K. So, like, this is what happens when when you pass prior highs. And Injective is the only chain, old chain. It is completely torn apart, Polkadot, Cardano, and everything else before it, as far as, like, actually beating its previous high from 2021. That's the reason why I picked it up this morning, because the FIB extensions, when you look at the price extensions after the all-time high, which was like $25, they come in at like $50 and like, I don't know what it is, 90 or something. So the reality is like these things move fast In fact, bookmark Injective, watch what happens and see if what I say comes true or not. Then you'll sort of see what I mean. But yeah, you cannot be in crypto and make money without the FIB extensions or tracements. I am telling you this, period, end of story.
No, I'm going to look into it.
No way you're going to be able to beat me if you don't do this. You have to.
I don't want to beat you. I want to beat myself at this point. But
no,
how do you get the FIBs? If it didn't have an all-time high before, how do you get the FIB extensions?
What's that? No.
You said for me to look at the FIB, right? I have to do the all-time high and then the low, right?
Yep. All you have
to. But how do you do that on a new coin that just got its first, all-time high now? How do you get the FIB?
You have to wait for the first big dip. That's the only time you can get the levels created. And the deeper the dip, the higher the levels go for the next move, interestingly enough. So volatility begets volatility to the upside.
Yeah. So what you're saying is I can't just stay dumb and make money. You're forcing me to learn something.
No, you cannot. No, you could do this, but you'll realize 5 years later, why didn't I just listen? That's what's going to happen.
But there are ranges as well. I mean, there are ranges on a lower term timeframes that you can do pull fibs from. In fact, if you're using like a good charting tool,
but I would argue that like fibs on the very short term are not particularly predictive. So the only thing I recommend doing is using like a daily chart, the daily candle size, and then just doing the very long term. And it's very, very easy. And you go to tradingview.com, you just play around in there, make yourself an account. You don't even need to pay for the damn thing because all you need is the one tool, is the FIB extension retracement. It's a FIB retracement tool. And you just basically draw these up and it just manages your expectations. And you'll be like, okay, you do this for every coin you're interested in. You're like, oh, okay, this one went up one retracement. This one made it to two. This one made it to three. And you'll get a good sense of what you are.
How long did it take you to find that out?
I was programming TradingView and stuff and trying to do all sorts of fancy shit for like a long time. Once I realized, holy shit, like the only thing that has any kind of like predictive roadmap value was this, it took me probably like 2 years to sort out that, okay, all the other shit does not work from a quantitative perspective. Like, so I like, so the,
I know you're a big FIB guy, so that's why I was asking. Cause
it's literally all you need to know. Like, how else would I be predicting the exact, places where the price stops, right? It's like, that's how I'm doing it.
Yeah, I'm a big FIB guy too as well, but I kind of learned doing my own little thing. Like, I use Fibonacci, don't get me wrong, but also...
You have to do it correctly, though. Like,
absolutely.
You have to only use, like, known definitive swing highs and swing lows, not, like, you can't just draw one up while it's on the way down or while it's on the way up. It's not quite accurate.
Also, I'd recommend, like, if you're doing swing trading type, also use Fib, but I use the 14, 50, and 200-day moving average, and also your MA and all that good stuff. So if you can...
You can do those, but what I realize, Matt, is that once you've looked at charts long enough, you don't need the moving average anymore. You can just notice. You'll notice just by the amount of time. You don't even need to look at the actual curve anymore. It just becomes meaningless. They're not predictive anyway, so it's like...
Well, they kind of are, though. Like, so, like, for instance, like, if you look at the 4 hour, if you look for like a golden cross, which is when the 50 crosses the 200, they're not always confirmed, but I would say probably 7 times out of 10, like if you see a nice golden cross on the 4 hour chart, I usually always put in my buys right then and there, especially if the RSI is oversold or, neutral, and you'll usually get a pretty nice influx of new buyers coming in at that point. I don't know if it's a bunch of TA geeks that are sitting there watching the charts like hawks, Matt, like I am. But
here's the thing, Matt. The reason why that is, I recommend not doing that. And I used to think the same thing is after programming a bunch of like algorithms on TradingView, you'll discover that like those are not effective enough consistently enough. And what you do is you end up missing the bottom. So what you end up doing, by the time you get a 5200 cross, you've already had like a 2 or 3x already. This is my problem with that. This is why I just simply martingale to the bottom and then just use the extensions to determine like the sell levels.
What I'm mainly saying that for is the swing trade, though. Like, if I'm not looking to grab bottom doing that, I'll grab bottom.
You're talking about a momentum trade.
Yeah, momentum
trade. That's a little bit different.
But, yeah, when I'm seeing everyone freaking the fuck out, Bitcoin dropped 10,000. Yeah, I'm probably.
So what you're doing, you know? Matt, is you're just pumping my bag. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, but hey, if I can make me some like, money and pump your bag at the same time, man, all win. It's a beautiful point, situation.
You should get an even before that. Technically, is all I'm pointing out. So
yeah, you but want you see what kind of like,
and you want them like, to pump your bag on leverage too.
Well, what I've been doing for years, though, Seffy, and this really fucking helps, like, especially for any new traders out there listening. So I'll fucking, like, I'll swing trade and I'll keep that capital. Like, I'll sell out, keep those gains for a really big dip. And when those big dips come, I have a big ass bag to buy that dip with. And I just ride that up and I hold on to it. So I use my swing trading to build my bag for the big dips and just grab a big ass bag when everyone's freaking out and selling and worrying about the market's going to crash. You know, I'm just fucking sitting there buying it up, you know?
Yep.
And Matt, how does your TA work on the Cosmos ecosystem? Have you been making like big gains, like shorting and longing Adam?
No. So I was a big proponent on, like I started the social media aspect of everything when AMC hit. I started shilling AMC at like $3. I started doing YouTube videos, charting on it and all that shit. So like I was part of the old AMC GameStop saga shit. So I don't really short anything, man. I don't fuck around with no 50x leverage. I just look for value where value's at, a low position, and I buy it. And
how many gains have you made on Atom or Osmo or anything in Cosmos, anything at all?
Yes, I mean, Luna Classic, I was buying Atom cheap as fuck. There was a lot of different plays besides Cosmos too as well. I mean, dude, I was making money on FTM. I got a huge-ass bag of Jasmine. Dude, I made a fuck ton of money on Jasmine when it shot to 24 cents. What was it, 2021, 22, whatever. So I'm fully expecting Jasmine to be a really big player next bull run. I mean, I heard someone speak about Solana, man. Fuck, if you'd asked anybody 6 months to a year ago if Solana was going to be anybody was bullish on Solana, they'd have told you fuck no. So, you know, anything at any point can fucking happen. You just got to look for value where you think there's value and hold true to what you're buying there, man, and, you know, hang on to it. Yeah. So the long game is always going to prevail.
I was like bullish on Solana. I mean, I saw Solana's pumps in the last bull market. I saw Solana down around like $6, $7, $8 or something. It was crazy. I was too stupid to buy at those levels, but like anyone who bought there is sitting
Don't feel bad, dude. Cause like last bull run when Solana was ripping before the FTX shit and all that, you know, I was like, Solana is going to be like the next Ethereum to bump up to $200 a coin. You know, I truly believed that back then. And then when I saw it at $7, my dumbass didn't buy it, you know, so. I
mean, by the way, there's another piece of the puzzle, by the way. And that is like, where is the actual, you know, top, where are the tops likely to be? And the only tool that is prescriptive of all of technical analysis, there is nothing else, is Fib extensions. That is it, and that's all. And that's the reason why it's a relevant measure, and it's the only one that anyone actually uses when it comes to crypto related, because there's no fundamentals in crypto. Most of it's like just pumpamentals, and like 95% is just mimification, right? So psychologic trading and whatnot drives the ship. And when psychology drives the ship, it's not fundamentals. Like most of these chains aren't worth hundreds of billions of dollars or whatever. It's just bullshit, right? So
You see those little videos of the Chinese people like dumping Bitcoin on you. You know what I'm saying? There's like zero fundamentals, man.
No, whatever. Like, forget about all that. But my point is, like, the extensions are the only sort of prescriptive tool or predictive tool of probable targets to the upside, especially after you pass prior high. And if you don't use those things, what will happen is you will underestimate how high exponential moves go in a log scale market where things like will 10 and 20 and 30x. And you can use the extensions really well to sort of decide, hey, wait a minute, do I want to try to get three extensions off the top? Do I really have, is there enough juice in the tank for that to do that? Or you know what? If I get one extension off the top, that's a 5x, fuck it, I'm out. So you could basically make decisions based on the Fib extensions. And get a pretty good concept of like how high these things can go. And if after you've done those a while, you don't have to do them either, because you'll have a pretty good sense of it just mathematically, like what those numbers look like. But basically, like, I'll give you like an example here. Like, let me pull up Zephyr, for example, as a good like lesson in kind of how high these numbers go. And then, you know, tell me if this is what you thought would happen. So Zephyr went from $1.88 to $52.35. That's the first major sort of move. The pullback that we just had dropped to about $19. But we know the price history. We don't know that the $19 is the low yet. We don't know that for sure. All we know is we have $1.88. Most likely that's a low, because unlikely for something with this much volume to ever go back to that level again. And then you got to 58.35, 52.35. So the extensions you get from that are $129. So after you pass prior high, you get 207, 408, and then 1,456. Those are the extensions based on this impulse move alone. When you get the next definitive low, meaning you have one big flagpole going up again, you can redraw this and adjust accordingly. But for now, like, is it plausible that a $50 million sort of market cap can go back to 120 million market cap? Yes, because it already did once. Is it plausible that a new coin like this with a gigantic gigahash, you know, mining army has enough, you know, meat and potatoes behind it to get to $129? Sure, no sweat. Fib extensions in crypto, like, especially when the coin is really early and illiquid, you might see this sucker go to like 408 just out of the blue, and you're like, what in the fuck? It's $25 now. And it could just keep going for, like, you know, like weeks, basically. So the thing is, if you don't draw these out, you're not sort of putting a roadmap for yourself and saying, wait a minute, where are the speed bumps likely to occur? And even if you just simply sold some at each extension, what will happen usually is other traders are doing the same thing, and you can buy back, you know, lower potentially with some of that bag if you want to trade it during that process, right? So in this example, like, so how would I manage my expectations of Zephyr? Well, crypto market caps can get to 500 million on a good project very, very easily. Like, I've had so many projects do that. It's just will numb your mind. And many of them are a lot less useful than Zephyr. So this one really has meat, you know, like legs behind it. So in this example, like, if I say, well, a 500 mil market cap makes sense. Okay, well, $50 was, I think, 100 mil market cap. So, you know, like five times that will get you to half a billion market cap. It's very, very feasible to hit levels of like $250, like $250 or so as far as the coin price. And that would not be unexpected. So if you take the Fib extensions coupled with the rationality of market cap sizes, you get a pretty good sense of like where a good number is that you're likely to reach. And with proof of work coins like this, if it's a really good one, it's not uncommon to reach like $1 to $3 billion market cap. How do we know that? Because Caspa just did it like a month ago, right? So we know these kind of things can do it. And we know Monero's market cap is 3 billion. And we know it hit peaks of like 10 billion plus on the way up, right? And then it settled in at 3. So I think like that's how I'm planning this out. It's not just like, well, I'll just sort of see what happens. And maybe if it goes up, I'll sell some and maybe I'll buy some back. There is a strategy to the levels of these things. And it's related to exponential price movements that happen with like very rapidly bid up low liquidity type coins. And this is just what happens. And I think it's really useful to play with that tool. It's basically free. And you just have to sort of like understand where to draw them. And it seems like magic for a while. You're like, wait, why the fuck does this work? But the reason it works is because human behavior, this is how people behave, right? Like if you look at how, like if you go to the shopping mall and you go, okay, you know, 40% is a pretty good discount on something. Is a deep discount on something. You're like, wait a minute, is this thing worth anything? 90% off, you're like, wait, why the fuck is this guy trying to pawn this thing off on me, right? So you have these different, sort of levels of like where human mind sort of like attributes valuation to these things based on like what the price actually is. And
And Zephy, like staying on human behavior, trading, Fibonacci extensions, how much stock do you put in Elliott Waves? Because Elliott Waves is the real sort of like killer application of trading, because everything that I've seen, it can predict, you know, years in advance where things end up, not just like, you know, days or weeks in advance.
Yeah, I mean, what they're looking at is basically like the markup and markdown periods. The problem is how do you draw them accurately? And then nobody knows how to do it. This is the problem. So I understand what it is. I tried to play with it a little bit and I realized it's just not worth the time, because the Fib extension tool, I can get my extensions and my retracements instantaneously. I can get a pretty good eyeball view of where they are. And not only that, but when you look at crypto, you'll see that some coins make it to their first retracement, the second, the third. So you can tell in relative terms which coins are performing better than the others immediately. And you can say, wait, do I want to buy this one because it hasn't moved yet? Or do I want to look at why this one's winning for some reason, and maybe I should jump into that one as a momentum play? And then you can do some research and decide. But like, Elliott Wave just take too long to figure out, and you can't compare really well an Elliott Wave one chart versus another. When crypto, all the coins tend to be somewhat correlated, mostly anyway. So now you're just trying to look at the relative performance of each. I think the Fib tool is just simpler. It's just faster. And it works perfectly sane. We'll look at Zephyr and we'll see. Watch my charts, by the way. I post them all the time, right? And you'll notice that everything hits perfectly exactly and then pauses right there.
Zephyr, I'm why? Just doing because it everyone's now using on, them. On TradingView, you just draw from the top to the bottom, right? And then it just gives you the different levels above the prior high. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you have to set the scales correctly. So
right.
I typically, for crypto, use the logarithmic scale. So you change your scale. And then when you draw your Fib extension, you have to put the settings inside of it and actually click the log scale there too. And then you'll just basically drag from the whatever price history you have that's most accurate. Prior lows and then prior bull market highs tend to be pretty good. Now that everything pumping again, where our lows have been put in. So now you can use the prior high and then the most recent low works fine. So whichever one you have actual price history for on the daily chart over a multi-year time frame.
So are Elliott Wave people just justifying their positions?
Yes.
Based on a bullish or bearish count after the fact and just saying, oh yeah, it could have went this way or that way, but it went this way, so now we're in the bearish or bullish. For me, it seems like it's powerful, but it seems like it's also an excuse.
No, it's like it's not really clearly predictive. I mean, maybe you can use it, it's fine, but like, it's just unnecessarily complicated for something that's a speculative asset. For a speculative asset class, pure psychology works well. Now, I've looked at Elliott Waves, so let's say Zephyr right now has had its first wave, right? Basically, the first dump. The second wave is the biggest, usually. So this is the reason why I've been telling all my friends, if you're going to bother with Zephyr, now is the time, because like the second wave is the giga wave, right? And then you have one blow off third wave and then things kind of settle again. So anyway, but yeah, you can pull up some examples of this. But the other problem with Elliott Waves is like, you don't really know where the waves end. Like people say it's wave 1, 2, 3, but in crypto, like look at Caspa, it goes up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. It just keeps going up, up and away. So like the problem is you might end up like selling too soon because you don't understand the markets very well. But if you understand like market caps and things, and you know the history of crypto and how these things move, you have to include that in the psychological analysis of like messing with these things, right? You see my point? And if you have to do all that shit, you don't know what your Elliott Waves are going to be until after you're done. Then you can obviously draw them. But you need something predictive.
The point of Elliott Waves is that it
predicts
so unpredictable.
It predicts nothing. But Fibs levels do predict something. The extensions do in crypto, at least. Watch, you'll see. Like every time I post these, I put those extensions on there. And you can go back and look and go, wait a minute, did it go there or not? What happened?
You'll for sure.
Yeah, you'll get a sense. But for BTC, it works phenomenally well, by the way. Bitcoin's next extension is 150K. We'll see if it happens.
I have been. I'm sort of past the Fib extension part. Like I've graduated Fib extensions. I'm now into Elliott Waves, and I'm just like, what the hell?
I wouldn't graduate from anything. Elliott Waves is just confusion. It's like it just doesn't help you at all. Because you don't know which wave is what. Like you're just drawing stuff. It's just a bunch of lines. It's not worth the time, trust me. I mean you could and then you could discover for yourself whether it's worth the time, but like just imagine. Think of it this way. Can you predict the future? The answer is no. right? You can't predict the future exactly. You can predict approximations of it, and you can kind of like help, you know, roll the dice in the right direction, but you're not going to know the future precisely. And in fact, nothing will help you there. You know, like nothing's like, you know, you can't predict a rug pull on a chart. You can't predict some gigantic YouTuber just showing up and pumping the shit out of your coin just out of the blue on a chart, right? You can't be sure about that. So those kinds of things will happen. You don't need to know why it happened. You know, all you need to know is like, well, something happened. It started catching a bid, pumping up. Then all you want to know is how high could this possibly go? That's all you care about, right? Because we know in a bull market, shit goes up. The question is, how much is it going to go up? This gives you a better feel for it, I think. So like if I bought Injective today at an all-time high break of $25, and if you ask me, like, how long are you in that thing? Are you going to sell it? Like, I'm already up. Am I selling it now? 3% gain? Do I sell it at $50? Do I sell it at 100? Like, how do you decide? Well, the fib extensions, even if you don't call it perfectly, at least it gives you a ballpark figure. Okay, $50 is a normal move for something like this. 100, two fib extensions. I think net 90 was the next one, whatever it was. But the point is, like, these are pretty common in crypto. Like, after all-time highs, things oftentimes will move one, two, or three, or even four fib extensions. The smaller the market cap is, the more extensions it pops over the top of the previous high. The bigger the market cap is, like, let's say a Chainlink or an Algorand or some shit, right? The bigger market caps, those don't move as high off their previous highs, right? So the return on investment for higher market cap stuff's always less, because they tend to be held down by gravity in a sense. And on the other hand, they may not dump as much in a bear market compared to their high as some other shit too. But that's the other flip side. So volatility for the upside and the downside starts to decrease. As that happens, the next set of fib extensions you draw are actually less return on investment. This is why something like Zephyr, or like I mentioned earlier, Neutron or something like that, these things are interesting because they're low market cap. The volatility is very high, but the upside is very high. You just have to realize that. And once you realize, by the way, another benefit of drawing the extensions is you understand how badly these things can go down too, right? Like you might not realize, oh, this shit can go down 90%, right? And you're like, oh, I don't really. So you end up panicking because you think that's abnormal. It is not abnormal. Like, it is normal for things to pull back like 50% and 70%, and that's all fine. And if you don't draw it this way, you don't visualize it in your head, you don't memorize this idea, and then so the fib tools will help you think differently. It'll tune your mind to sort of understand the movements better. And I think and a lot of traders use it, so they tend to be self-fulfilling prophecy anyway. So that's
kind of what do you look for in the fib though? When it breaks a fib, like if you're going to sell, like you just want to make a little bit of money on this, what do you wait for it to break? What fib extension, the second, the third, and then a huge separation between the fourth one? Do you wait for that separation, or right when you hit it, or after it passes it, you sell?
Yeah, good question. I mean, basically, if I find that if it's a very high market cap thing, like let's say Bitcoin, right? So if you draw its extensions out from the previous like low, which was like $3,500, all the way to the high, which was like $65,000 or $70,000. Your next extension for BTC comes out at 150K, right? 150K is a big market cap, right? So is it rational to hit that? Yes, it's rational because Bitcoin usually hits its fib extensions. However, am I going to expect it to go to the next fib extension after that? I mean, holy shit, that's a crazy ass market cap, right? Probably not. Not that quickly. So Bitcoin, the longer it goes and the bigger the market cap gets, the less fib extensions you can expect. So you need to be using CoinGecko or CoinMarketCap. Look at the market caps of your coins. If you have someone that's a 5 million market cap, shit, that shit can run like seven extensions, right? Because it can just moon if it starts to go up. On the other hand, if you have like really, really big market caps, expect less of those extensions to be hit. So Injective is a great example. It passed its all-time high today. Typically, if something's that bullish and so aggressive, and its market cap is, I think it was a billion or something like that, maybe two billion, I'm sorry, 2 billion. With that much popularity, can that bitch hit 10 billion? Yes, it can. Right. So like, so in this, in that example, I'm like, okay, I believe 4 billion is a given. Like one extension is like $50. And then the next one above was like 90. And I'm like, I think I can hit 90 probably. If you just look at the market cap that represents, is that rational? So what you have to know is like, if you don't understand the previous history of market caps of various coins, and this is when you come in new to trading, you're like, I don't even like, I just bought some coin. I don't know what's what. You don't realize that the market caps vary dramatically in terms of their size, and smaller market caps move a lot more and you should expect more movement. Or why are you even in that thing, by the way? If you're in a small high risk coin, which is like a low market cap, if you don't get a 10 or 20x out of it, what the fuck are you doing in a thing? Like, it doesn't even make sense to be in such a high risk thing if you don't have high upside, right? So smaller market cap things, earlier people that buy into those are more diamond handed because they're early and they're ready to have that thing moon. And you end up seeing those things move a lot. And then the higher market cap stuff just use less fib extensions. So Bitcoin, if it goes to one extension above prior high, I'm like, wow, amazing. It's 150K. Awesome. Something like Injective, I think it could go to three, but that's probably getting greedy. I might say fuck it and get out at like two extensions, maybe at $90, right? And that might represent like maybe a little bit more than a 3x for
Steffi,
me.
Why are you using the log scale? I've got the linear scale and it's giving me different numbers.
You have, well, it'll give you the similar numbers if you click the log scale correction in the
You have to have a professional trading view account.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, then use a linear scale, then don't worry about it. So the reason I use the log scale is because it's very hard to see these gigantic moves on a linear scale.
Right. So I think
because the chart's going to get like, right? Because log scale is exponential. Yeah. Linear scale is, you're going to have this tiny little blips on your chart at that point. But crypto moves so aggressively, which is why I use a log scale versus like stocks. I'll just use the linear scale.
It looks like it gives me more levels. So if I do a retracement from the all-time high on Bitcoin down to the most recent low, you get one level at 100K, then 150.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if you use the recent high and what we consider the swing low at 16,000 or 15,000, then you'll get a slightly different series. Exactly. And 100K Bitcoin is at one level, and I think 150 is the next. We did that earlier. And then if you use the previous cycle, so you go all the way down from like the... Because officially, man, you don't officially know that this is low, right? You don't know for sure. So the only thing you know for sure is the prior low, which is like 3,500, and you know the prior high, which is like whatever, 65K or whatever it was, 70K. And so that gives you a more like cemented version of this, where it's like, you know for sure that that's true. Because the longer back in the price history you go, the more certain you know your highs and lows to generate this information. Does that make sense? Yeah. But you can even draw, like, you can draw these, by the way, for past history. Go back to BTC, go to the dump from like 20,000, remember when it was like 2017, and draw one down to the $3,000 dip, which ultimately ended up being kind of the low. And then look at where the extensions show up on that, and you'll notice that Bitcoin conform to that pretty well.
You can always back
this. I mean, on the nose, honestly. And remember, how do you know, by the way, how do you know that you've reached a higher low for sure? Because you break the previous high, right? When you break the last high, so Injective, right? You can do a whole new set of fibs now because you know for sure where the new low is, right? Because you broke prior high. You know that that was a low. You got it? Like that's the trick.
Oh, yeah.
Until you have broken the prior high, you don't know for sure that you're not going to go lower, not with certainty. That's why the tool is very specific in how you pick your so-called swing high, swing low, and all that. Right? So with Injective, you can do that. With BTC, you don't know for sure we're not going to go to another low. So that's why I use the 3,500 to 65,000 level until we get a break of BTC above prior high. Then you could do the confirm, and then, like, of course, if you did that, let's say for example BTC's low was 16K this last season, then that would put like, yeah, the next extension would be like 100K, and then the one after that's 150, something like that. So anyway, but you get a sense of it. And some people use both methods. So you'll see resistance on the chart at both types of methods, using the prior year or even the most recent low. Different traders do it different ways. So that's why you'll see like resistance at both of those levels. People will be selling at those fibs. So remember, another thing here too is you don't really have to give a shit if this predicts the future or not. You're not Nostradamus or some shit. The reality is that a lot of other traders use the exact same thing. So you know for sure they'll be selling at those levels, right? That's the intuition here. Remember, you don't really care. You know, what are the whales doing? Are they going to be using those fib levels? Or are they not? And if they are, you're going to get a self-fulfilling prophecy, in which case you can predict, okay, I probably shouldn't go into a long position right here because there's going to be a lot of sellers right about there, right? So that's the thinking.
I think as well it gives you more conviction to hold, right? If you have no frame of reference to know how high it's going to go, this gives you a level.
Yeah, and you have no other reference anyway. Like, what were you going to do? Just guess? See? So you got some reference at least then, right? Exactly. That's exactly right. This is why I just sleep good at night going, okay, injective is going to go to 50, no sweat. And I can decide once it goes to 50, do I want to sell some or do I want to keep it or whatever, right? Because here's the thing. Let's say injective, I bought it at 25. Let's say it gets to the $50 level, right? At that point, let's say some other coin looks interesting and I'm like, okay, I'm going to get out of this fucking thing. And that looks more interesting right now. It looks like it hasn't moved yet or whatever, right? Or maybe you just want to take profit and you're like, well, you know what? I'm going to put it in something that's like more stable. Like I'll throw an Atom, get my 14% yield or whatever, and, you know, protect my gains in something that has less downside at this point. Maybe not as much upside, right? You can redecide your risk or whatever at that point and how much greed you have on that particular thing. And by the way, it doesn't mean that like you'll reach these levels within 1 minute, right? Like it can take, you know, a couple of weeks to make it to these levels. So it's easy to get scared because when you're going on the way up and some dip happens, you're like, oh shit, like, I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe it's going to go down again, right? Like you start panicking. Whereas the probability of actually hitting those levels is quite high. And therefore you should only like veer from that plan if you just, you know, you have some other reason for doing so.
Zeph's looking good. Up to 27.
There you go. So yeah, it's like, let's see here. Yep. See, its fib was 25.69. So if it climbs in this direction and breaks out, it'll just kind of go apeshit completely. It'll get there. I have very high confidence it'll get there. Why? Because you know how many computers it takes to get to fucking 3 gigahash per second. Do you know how many people are watching this coin at this moment? A fuck ton of people are watching this coin and have a lot of money invested in mining it. And those people, they're not going to just mine it. They're going to buy the coin because if you had that much conviction to bother to do it, it's actually cheaper to buy the coin. So like usually miners will pick some up. So like I have very little doubt in this particular situation that we're going to go up. Very little doubt. I'd say probability of beating prior high is like 99% in my head. Like I have no doubts in my mind at all. But that's just, again, that's assuming that no, you know, catastrophe happens, you know, whatever. So
pretty good.
You know, I'm just talking
about like pure 5 days or something now. It's just going to fucking moon.
Yeah. 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 It won't take that long. Cause remember, like these are, look at the chart. Like the last time it went to $6 and dripped to $4 and then just took off. Right. So these small market caps, what happens is the order book is so thin on MEXC that what will happen is you may not even see like a nice curve where it slowly goes back up and then breaks high. There's so little actual Zephyr on the exchange there. As soon as the bidding starts to happen, it just starts to moon randomly. Like, you know, a few days go by, next thing you know, you're at $129 or whatever.
But in the near term, do you expect it to outperform BTC? Because
yes,
it's been hard for altcoins to outperform BTC in the short term.
Well, remember, the market cap when I bought this thing was like 15 million. So it already did a 10x just now, like last, you know, a few weeks ago. So from where I bought it at, it actually did a 50x from the bottom, or not 50x. Yeah, close. But point is, like, yes, it will absolutely rip BTC to shreds in the short term. Yeah. Yeah, there's no way like you're going to make anything. First of all, when I bought BTC, it was like at $3,000, at $3,500 again. And I bought it again at $16,000, $17,000, $18,000. I bought it several times because that's closer to the cost to mine. If you're buying BTC now, you have no idea what you're doing in this space, I think, honestly. Like people like you bought it at the wrong time and now you're also just allocating incorrectly again. Whereas like if you go to a variety of sort of mid to small market caps, you get higher gains and you can drop that into BTC later if you want to. Right. So that's kind of what people do.
Well, BTC represents something on autopilot where the founder.
Sure.
It's a store of value. Yeah. And it's a store of value. And everyone, you know, that you talk about GigaHash, it leaves everything in the dust.
Of course. You can always use that as your store of value, but the time to buy it wasn't now. The time to buy it was clearly closer to the price to mine, which is like, you know, this sub 18K level.
Well, yeah, the time to buy it, but you could buy things now that have bigger upside for the next 2 years that in 3 years are gone, right?
Sure. It's possible. Although blockchains are hard to kill now, man. Like, it's gone is a... Like a lot of things aren't gone. Gone is kind of a relative term, I would say. But you can get all sorts of things that go up. That's not the thing. You can use whatever you want for store of value. I use Atom for store of value. It works quite nicely. You got BTC for store of value. Anything with a sufficiently high enough market cap that has some fundamentals behind why people would hold it are going to maintain. Like Ethereum, people use for store value.
But too. If you had bought Atom 2 years ago instead of BTC, you lost out.
Compared to when?
Well, let's put it this way. So I bought Atom, you know, at like 12, 15, something like that. I've just now broken even. But at a comparative time, I think I bought BTC at 20 or 25. You know, we're now at 40 something.
Sure. No, you, in a short term time frame, anything can beat anything, right? Just a matter of, you know, it depends on whether like. So what did I do? I bought BTC at about 16 to 18K is when I scaled most of it in. I sold it at 27K. I bought Chainlink at about average of $7. And then that is now at like 15 or so. And that's what I do with my little trading bag of Bitcoin. That's what I spent it on. So I got most of the upward move of BTC, and then I got a substantial portion of the upward move of Chainlink. And, it worked out just fine. So I'm ahead, right? So it just depends on what, like, so yeah, there's a way and there's a time and a place to buy Bitcoin. It's just, you know, like, it's not just like, oh, DCA or whatever. Like, there is an exact time and a place that you consider getting it. And that is historically been either at or below the cost to mine. And that may not continue into the future, but thus far, that has been the plan.
So when you say you sold BTC at 27, you sold the BTC you bought at 3, 4, 5, 6, 7,000 at 27, and you had none of it left, or you kept some?
No, I have BTC, and then I have a trading bag that's different. Yeah, so I trade with some of it and not all of it.
Gotcha. Because I try to take profits back into BTC from some other altcoins that I don't expect to be here in 5 years, because I feel like BTC is the baseline gold level of the ecosystem.
What were you asking? I missed that last point.
I was just saying, other coins and other ecosystems, you know, profits in that, I try to take back into BTC if possible, because I expect that to outlast 90% of the other chains. So,
oh, sure. Yeah, you can do that. I do some of that. I'll take some of it to stocks and just buy dividend stocks or whatever. It depends on what my goal is.
Well, it's hard to transition out of crypto and into stocks. You know, you have to take liquidity out of the crypto ecosystem and then into the
sure.
in real life system. So, yeah, that's hard.
You get a swap to bank account and all that shit, right?
Exactly.
Well, I mean, you know, the point is you can do whatever you want with it. It's just money. Just don't over. We try to silo these things, but they're whatever, right? Anyway, did you pick up anything else interesting lately?
I did pick up some Neutron. Thank you very much. A little bit of that. To take a ride on the Neutron train. Okay. And then I'm looking at NFTs as well. Obviously, I am heavily NFT based as well. Stargaze, you know, I've got my Stargaze bag, so.
Yeah, do you do these Cosmo. For, is this more for entertainment or do you use it for like, so you trade NFTs and stuff?
Well, I contribute as much as I can to the culture and I trade the NFTs, you know, back and forth. But, you know, I'm a notorious NFT hodler. I minted Wreck Gang, for example, when they were known as Wrecked Wolf back on Terra. And I've never sold a single one of them. So, you know, I hodl this stuff. Once it's like blue chip, you know, I keep it around. I've got still the first NFT I've ever minted, which was a Galactic Punk on Terra as well.
Mm-hmm.
That was a little bit more painful, but, you know, fist up in the air, Galactic Punks are going to rise. And I have a lot of faith in that team. So NFTs for me is cultural. I don't treat much of any of this really as like a life-changing investment, although sometimes it can surprise on the upside, but it's a lot of fun and I have a lot of fun, like, you know, staying in the NFT ecosystem and just understanding the culture and watching Stargaze succeed. So I take a lot of pride in that.
Yep. Sometimes just fun supporting what you like, you know, it doesn't have to be all money.
I don't tend to move fiat liquidity in and out of these investments. So a lot of what happened last year in the bull run is just stayed in and moved around, changed in terms of like, you know, collections in NFTs and different cultures and now Neutron, as you suggested. So it just changes form, but none of this is actually paying in real life bills. It's mostly just crypto native stuff that sort of stays in the ecosystem.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ants dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days, got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom over impossible loss. It's all moss and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary falls. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of dinner lace, stacked in non-toxic, just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage, like this shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible, when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full full throttle heat, tearing apart your community. All these low hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege. Commanding all the management to grab a few Z's, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We raping under the earth, say and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served.
Terror Spaces.